Hello, dear listeners of First World Manila. Magandang umaga, magandang hapon, magandang gabi. Buenos dias, buenas tardes. Hello and good evening. Welcome to another episode of the First World Manila podcast. Inspiring Filipinos to reform the system. That's my new working tagline for now. We'll see how it goes. But it could change. The next episode, or the following, or sometime in the future, but that's what it is right now. Right. Well, now I want to move on to our subject for today. This episode is being recorded the evening of Miss Catriona Gray's win at the 2018 Miss Universe. So, of course, I thought it would be a great time to use this as a way to use this event as a way to talk about more about our culture. And what, in usual First World Manila fashion, what's good, what's not so good, what could be reformed, and how it relates to what we need to do for this country, to the Philippines, to help make it better. Okay. I first want to say, well, I don't normally watch, well, actually, I don't think I've ever watched a full, a beauty pageant. It's just not my thing. It never has been. I mean, it's really a lot of eye candy there, but for me, it's not really my thing. But I mean, whatever I say, I mean, before I say anything going forward, I just want to congratulate Senorita Gray. Congratulations. Felicidades. Mabuhay. You've done your country proud, and good for you. Also, I really like the memes that came out. Oh, I love the internet. And sometimes I love the internet when it's harmless or it's just all fun. I mean, I have two memes here right now. For those of you who are listening on podcasts, I just want to show it to you. Like the first one is this. I didn't see the actual Miss Universe contest, but it was funny to see Senorita Gray with this guy. I'm not sure who that is. But it looks a lot like, if you've ever seen the old 80s movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit, it looks like Jessica Rabbit dancing with Bob Hoskins, so it's pretty hilarious. This other one here of showing Miss Gray's dress, red, looking like EDSA during rush hour in the evening, all red and lit up. This is brilliant. There's some really brilliant people on the internet. There's some really brilliant Pinoys on the internet, so good for them. So those memes are really funny, I have to say. So when I was hearing, so this morning I walked into the co-working space I worked in, and everyone was watching. I could just hear it. Everyone was watching the contest. And yeah, watching her win and being all excited and proud and I'm sure, like you, like my social media timelines blew up with everyone talking about it. So I started to obviously read into everything and get caught up what was going on, since obviously this is something that's obviously very pertinent right now to Philippine culture. For those of you who don't know, Miss Universe is sort of like the. It's like the big event for international beauty pageants, and this being the Philippines, we love our beauty pageants, and this is a big win for us. We've won, I think, twice before, so this makes Senorita Gray our third winner. So it's great. But I do want to talk about sort of the. I want to take this opportunity to dive into further why beauty contests are so popular in our culture and how, and then striking sort of a personal with this because I'm actually descended from the first official national beauty queen, which was in the early 1900s. It was called the Carnival, the Manila Carnival. So my great grandmother, Pura Villanueva Calau, was the first official winner. And it's funny because back then the criteria for winning these pageants was a bit different, and I wanted to compare and contrast what beauty pageants were like back then versus what they are now. And this isn't to, pass judgment on anyone or knock on anyone, and especially not Senorita Gray. I think, again, she seems like a very nice person. She's obviously worked really hard to get where she is. But, sort of what we can learn from the past, hopefully that can inspire us going forward into the future, the past beauty pageants and what it's sort of meant for people. Okay. So let's start with, first of all, let's go over how sort of the beauty pageant industry works and how deeply sort of ingrained it is in our culture to win these pageants. So I have, as usual, for most of my podcasts, I have a list of sources here now in my browser, and we'll just go through a couple of them. So the first one is this it's this article from Culture Trip talking about why the Philippines dominates world beauty pageants. So not only are we not only is if not only is beauty pageantry a big part of our culture, we're also very good at it. We seem to excel at it, something we're good at. The Filipino can be proud of. Okay, I'm just gonna read some passages from this, and as usual, links will be in the description. But anyways, I will read some passages from this article. This is from writers Miss Katrina Escalona. Okay, so blah 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 blah. Okay, the grand events. I didn't know anything about this until like this afternoon when I did my research. The grand events of beauty pageantry, the most prestigious international ones are Miss Earth, Miss International, and Miss World, and then Miss Universe. So throughout history, the Philippines has, okay, I'm just, I mean, this isn't verbatim, but you get the point. The Philippines has garnered the top crown a total of 14 times, four for Miss Earth, six for Miss International, one for Miss World, and three glorious coronations for the Miss Universe stage. And this is written before Miss Gray won, so I guess it makes four glorious coronations in the on the Miss Universe stage. Let's see. Many factors seem to play a role in why we're good at this kind of things. This gives Filipinos all over the world a sense of national pride. That's one thing. And I'm reading here for verbatim. For a country that has suffered centuries under colonial rule, a large population of which still carries some deep-seated feeling of being the underdog, acclaim and recognition counts for something. The world of pageantry allows the Philippines a sense of not only being capable and at par, sharing the stage with the rest of the world, but even a sense of victory, a feeling withheld from them for a great part of their history. That's true. I agree with that. Victory on an international level against sort of international players, it's a very big deal for the Philippines. I mean, if you think about even our history, you could even see our war for independence from Spain, the US was kind of failed. So I think this obviously gives us a greater sense of national pride. This article, Why the Philippines Dominates World Beauty Pageants, also talks a little about how this happens on a how these pageants also happen even on a small local scale. So there are what they're called beaucons, or I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. So please forgive me if I'm not. It's either beaucons or bocons. I'm assuming it's beaucons. So I'll just call it beaucons for the remainder of this podcast. Aside from bringing the community together, which again the author is talking about beaucons now, these smaller localized beauty pageants. For many, they serve as a source of entertainment and escape from reality, which for many in the Philippines living below the poverty line isn't always so great. Okay, it becomes a breather from life's complications, and for a moment, they get to focus solely on a world of beauty, crowns, and dreams. So an escape from the harsh realities of life. Understandable. So those are some reasons why, but it's interesting. I think this article is interesting because it highlights how even on a micro level, beauty pageantry is so important in our national culture. Okay, the next article I want to talk about and read some passages from is from Rappler. This one is called, if I just minimize myself here. The Philippines Beauty Pageant Obsession. Who benefits? This is a bit more in depth. It's actually quite investigative. So, if you have some time, I definitely suggest you read this one. So again, this one at one point the writer, Senora Gutierrez, right, talks about what maybe she's quoting one person, Rick Galvez, a founder of leading pageant website Missology. as to why what the historical reasons are for us liking pageantry. So, according to Mr. Galvez, our passion for beauty pageants could probably be traced back to the Spanish times. The traditional Santa Cruzan festival demands that the most beautiful lass in the barrio should be the Reina Elena. That in itself was a form of beauty pageant, and that could be the roots of our love affair with beauty pageants. So even before official pageants, there was already a man, what is the word I'm thinking of? The word There was a precedent already set for our love of beauty pageantry. This was further stamped on the Philippine consciousness during the American period through carnival queens. Again, my great grandmother, my bisabuela, a title bestowed on the winner of a beauty and talent competition. So the article goes further on, and it's interesting is that even quantitatively speaking, we're quite good at pageantry. So I'm gonna scroll down a bit. This is a quite a long and involved article, but I wanted to highlight. Okay, so there's a website. Excuse me. There's a website called Global Beauties. It's a Brazil and Panama-based website that analyzes international beauty pageants, and the Philippines has been ra ranked on the top of its annual Grand Slam ranking 2 years in a row in 2016 and 2017. I wonder about 2018. When was this article written? This article is written. Beginning of 2018, so maybe we were ranked a third time. I don't know, but two in a row is pretty good. So going back to Senor Galvez, it is safe to say that the pageant industry in the Philippines is a multi-million peso industry. So here we're talking about the business side of pageantry. For pageant owners, there are always sponsors that are very willing to shell out substantial amount of money because there is widespread interest in beauty pageants. So obviously, if something that's so widely desired and liked in a culture, of course people are going to make money from it. I mean, that's business, not unsurprisingly. And it's not just, and the article also highlights that it's not just the sponsors themselves. Again, quoting Senor Galvez, from small-scale couturiers to famous fashion brands such as Michael Cinco or Francis Libiran, our interest in pageantry gave our fashion designers a much-needed boost. Many foreign countries, for example, have tapped Albert Andrada after his gown was used by Pia Wurzbach at Miss Universe. The same is true for several Filipino pageant trainers and makeup artists. So, again, a lot of people benefit monetarily from this. So, of course, why not? And what's interesting is that this Rappler article does talk about how, even though it's such a big part of our culture in the West, for example, and I've seen this too, just looking at I think with the Me Too movement and everything like that, and the whole allegations against President Trump's bad behavior when he was in charge of some of these pageants, or he was involved in them, in the West, for example, beauty pageants are quote sort of objective. Sort of objectification of women. That's what they're seen as. Of seeing women as sources of pleasure. That makes some people uncomfortable about pageants and claim that they are merely an excuse to ogle women. Yeah, that's true. I mean, ogle, I mean, that's why they walk around in bikinis, right? Let's be honest here. For these reasons, again, reading from this Rappler article, for these reasons, in countries outside the Philippines, there has been a backlash against beauty pageants. So, yeah, it's interesting. So why so popular in our country? Beauty is so well re rewarded in the Philippines that beautiful women and beauty queens enjoy fame and power. Someone, I'm not sure she's quoting here, I'm too busy to read the article, but one of the persons in this article is talking about how in the West or in other countries, beauty queens are not able to translate their beauty titles into power, unlike here, where former beauty queens have gone on to become influential actresses and politicians, among others. This is true. So, Imelda Marcos, for example, is a beauty queen. One of my great grandmother's daughters, Maria Calocatigbac, became a beauty queen, a carnival queen in the 30s. She would be my great, she would be my grand aunt. What's the word for that? But yeah, she became a senator later on. So yeah, it definitely happens. But it looks even before talent. Again, we'll get to that later on in this podcast. Were enough to help you with a political career. Okay, this is a good. This next article is a good one. This is Channel News Asia. I like the stuff that they make with that they write about in the Philippines. I'm a big fan of the coverage of the Philippines, Channel News Asia. It's good because it's. I mean, they get sometimes non-Filipinos to comment, and obviously, it's not a Channel News Asia isn't a Philippine publication, so the spin might even be a little bit different. Okay, in Philippines, an obsession with beauty pageants. That's the name of this article in Channel News Asia. So again, tracing why we love pageants. The national love for these pageants can be traced back to the American colonial days. The Americans introduced the popularity of beauty pageants during the early American colonial period, said Professor Wendell Capilli. In 1908, we had the Philippine carnivals, which was supposed to be to promote products from different regions of the Philippines. This is also the carnival where my great grandmother won. Lola Inay is what we called her. So another thing about this article is that this Channel News Asia article is that it does talk about how some of the more recent beauty pageant winners have actually parlayed this into something that's very helpful. So. One's former Miss Universe was talking about how winning the competition changed her life drastically. So this former Miss Universe Moran, what's her first name? Well, I don't know, but anyways, one of them was saying, "Winning the pageant was just became a stepping stone of what I really wanted to do," she said. "It really opened doors for me. I went into advertising and marketing, and that experience of exposing myself to people and making myself more comfortable with people brought me to the career path I had." So good for her. More power to you. And that's totally true. I mean, if you want a job, you have to get out there and network. And what better way to for people to know who you are than be interviewed on stage on, internationally broadcasted television. Why not? After winning the crown, this winner went on to finish her studies at universities in the US and UK, became an advocate for peace in Mindanao, launched several businesses, became a host, produced a multi-award-winning movie. Wow. I wonder what that is. And is now CEO of Ballet Philippines. Great. Enhorabuena. What's interesting too is that this is the only article from what I read, from the articles I'm citing here that talks about maybe who's funding some of these businesses. So it turns out, this is interesting, that the biggest private sponsor of Miss Universe is former Ilocos Sur Governor Luis Chavit Singson, who is spending $40 million to bankroll the project. Like, wow. That's how big it is here. And hearing about Chavit Singson, well, you know as well as I what kind of person or his reputation, so who knows what's really going on behind the scenes? Okay. Now I want to talk a bit about what beauty pageants were like in the past, particularly during the middle of Carnival, because that's where it started in its modern form, these beauty pageantries, but it was very different back then. And also, it does, of course, as I said earlier, it does strike a personal tone with me because my great grandmother was the first winner. Okay, so town and country. This article is called Carnival Queens: Inside the Grand Intriguing World of the Manila Carnival. Excuse me, Carnival Queens: Inside the Grand Intriguing World of the Manila Carnival and its Storied Beauties. For many daughters of the Buena Familia, excuse me. For many daughters of the Buena Familias, the Carnival Queen itself title was a passport to further one's fame, fortune, and social prominence. So not much different from today, but it was certainly reserved for certain people. This, by the way, over here is my great grandmother on the right. That's Pura Villanueva Calao, back then known as Pura Garcia Villanueva. I think it's her daughter. Is that Maria Calocatic back on her right? That might be her. So yeah. So the idea was to, I mean, the first carnival happened a few years after the Americans, quote unquote, pacified the Philippines, and to sort of, I guess, start their program of so-called benevolent assimilation, the Americans wanted to hold a big event. Initially, it was supposed to be a human zoo, which the governor general did not like at all. So instead, it became a carnival. Can you believe they actually made this, wanted to make a human zoo in the Manila? That's crazy. Or for Filipinos, that's insane. Although they've done that before, I think it was the Chicago World's Fair where they brought Filipinos to be exhibited in a human zoo there. What's it, 1880s? 1890s, I think, or early 1900s. But it's crazy that people are really thinking about having an international exposition as a human zoo. That's pretty insane. But things were certainly less politically correct back then. Okay. So let's see. Instead of a human zoo, Secretary of Commerce William Cameron Forbes designed an international exposition to make the world take note of the gains made by the Philippines, which he hoped would further drum up more economic opportunities. So, again, the financial and economic reasons behind these pageantries and events. The search for the queen of the carnival was done through public balloting, by the way. I got a story for you in a second after this, after I read this next pa the next few passages. Okay. If there was one carnival feature that would come to define and single out the fair's lasting and singular t highlight, it would have been to, it would ha it would had to have it would have had to have be the national quest for Las Reinas del Carnaval, the queens of the carnival, who, just by their mere presence, inspired awe and excitement, mesmerized crowds, and captivated a whole country with their allure and achievements. Designed primarily to raise funds, it would signal the start of a beauty tradition that was to last for over three long decades, so through the 30s. While the carnival shows and exhibits elicited initial interest, it was a beautiful carnival queens who made more lasting impressions, and it proved to be the carnival's main attractions and crowd drawers. After all, to qualify as a candidate, one had to have a good standing in La Alta Sociedad, so high society, with impeccable breeding, character, education, and personality, not to mention financial capability. So a bit different, a little bit different from beauty pageants today, which is open to everybody, and we'll get to that in a second. There's another article I want to read addressing this addressing that. So here's actually a little paragraph about my great grandmother. With her impeccable credentials, Pura was already an established Spanish writer of repute for the newspaper El Tiempo, so already a writer, and the founder of the Asociación Feminista Ilonga, a feminist group. She was fetched from Iloilo on a special boat and whisked off to the grandstand. So actually, to make some cuento, she was actually not the original winner. It was Miss Lim Hap, but I think she was in Japan at the time, so she was sort of like the second place winner. But still, it is what it is. So El Renacimiento, which is a newspaper that her future husband, my great grandfather Teodoro M. Calo, ended up being the editor for, reported on her sensational arrival. The Queen of the Orient, which is what the title she was given, because there are two queens during the carnival in those days, one for the west, one for the east. Okay, so the Queen of the Orient, standing up in her car and waving her handkerchief in answer to the enthusiastic cries of the crowd delirious with joy, was easily the most simpatico figure of the royal cavalcade. Dignified without descending from her rank, she had in her the beautiful amalgam mixture of the aristocratic and of the affectionate towards her people. So actually, this has another picture of her. I'm going to scroll down this website. Here she is again. This is another picture of Pura V. I guess with the other her retinue of princesses and consorts. Wow, everyone's really dressed up here. Yeah, there was ballot voting. See, Yeah, so it's very interesting. Here's another picture of my great grandma. I like this one too because she looks so stern and serious, and I wonder why she won because she's the only mestiza woman here among these other women. La Reina del Oriente. Here we go. So the by the way, the person who was supposed to win the first beauty pageant was Leonardo Limhap, but again she declined. So Pura Villanueva won instead. Anyways, Pura would marry lawyer and journalist Teodoro Calo after her reign. She is known today as an author, businesswoman, and women's rights champion. That's true. She was one of the people who helped the vote and definitely helped help the finances of the family. Okay, here's another article from the Inquirer. Okay, this is what I want to talk about. This one kind of delves into more detail why or how pageants back then were a bit different from pageants now. Okay, this article is called "Beautiful with a Heart." It's by the noted historian Ambeto Campo. I mean, I guess he's like the pop historian of our country. So this is more about my great grandma, but there were some things about that really struck me about this article. So I'm going to read this now. The Manila Carnival Queens and pre-war Miss Philippines were chosen based on three criteria: beauty, talent, and good family background. They were not subjected to swimsuit contests showing off their vital statistics. Ha ha ha. Nor were they asked inane questions to check if they had gray matter in their heads and a heart that beats for some relevant cause, or, to put it in more contemporary terms, beautiful with a heart. So it was less about looks and more about breeding and talent. And, I would say intelligence. Here's the next paragraph. Three of the Carnival Queens were prominent in the movement to win the right to vote for Filipino women. Pura, 1908, the founder of the Asociación Feminista Ilonga. Paz Marquez Benitez, 1912, one of the brightest stars in the first generation of writers in English and a co-founder of the Philippine Women's University. And Trinidad Fernandez Legarda, 1924, editor of Women's Outlook, who served as president of the National Federation of Women's Clubs. So, a little bit different. Pre-war beauty queens became symbols of the quote-unquote modern Filipino woman of their time, in contrast to the idealized Maria Clara of Rizal's Nolime Tangere, and the cheerful sunlit rural maidens in the paintings of Fernando Amorsolo. These carnival queens were urban, highly educated, articulate in English, Spanish, and their native languages. Comfortable both in American ways and in the old Hispanic Philippine customs, they made the terno and pañuelo fashionable. So, now that I've read these articles on both modern and old sort of pre-war beauty pageants, we can compare and contrast. I think obviously back in the older pageants, they were certainly elitist, but I don't think we should throw away the baby with the bathwater. What I mean to say by that is that we should also appreciate. Okay, fine. I love beautiful women too. It's like so many other people, but we should also look at their credentials and their contributions to society and their intelligence education. And I'm not saying that current beauty contestants don't have this, and I'm sure a lot of them do, and and a good number of them are very well-meaning, but that's not that's I mean let's be real here, that's not the be-all end-all, or that's not the main focus of current modern beauty pageants, which is why there's been a backlash against them, especially in the West, in the US, for example. So that's not the focus of modern excuse me, of modern beauty pageants. But I mean, it is good that it's been democratized, that anyone can come from anywhere and and go into these join these pageants. But there is something to be said about, I guess, quote unquote, breeding and manners. Although I did watch for research for this podcast, I did watch Senorita Gray's interview. She was very charismatic, and you know, she's very charming, and I think it's great. You know, there is some positive things about beauty pageantry in that sense. It's good to have people who are well presented and polite and charming and have, for lack of a better word, breeding, no matter where you're from. The only what really just upsets me though is that, I mean, it's fine to for the Philippines to like beauty pageants, but you know, we should there should be a counterbalance to this. Like, we should also like other contributions from other Filipinos, and I think it's important because, again, it develops our national culture and our ideals and what we want to strive for as a country, which, again, going back to the thesis of this podcast, we need that sort of unified national identity so that people put the interests of the country above their own interests, and the interests of their friends and family. So for what I mean by counterbalance is that, like, for example, I was talking to a friend in the co-working space I work at today, and you know, I was just upset because, like, yeah, everyone's talking about Senorita Gray's win, but what about Wesley So? This guy was a chess pr this guy's a chess prodigy, and he didn't even know who he was. My friend didn't know who he was, but this guy was a chess prodigy, and he had to leave the country. I mean, there were through this article here from spin.ph, how the Philippines managed to lose a potential world chess champion in Wesley So. I mean, obviously their politics go in, it's a bit messy, but the fact is that, like, no one really talks about this guy, but this guy could have really done a lot for our country. But apparently now he's playing for the US because things are just so hard here. He's now, as of the writing of this article, July 13, 2017, he was the number two ranked chess player in the world. So I wish we had more pride in people like this. And not to take anything away from beauty pageantry, but I wish that on a national, I wish my social media feed is blowing up by people by Senor So's exploits and wins theoretically for the Philippines in chess. I mean, you have to be really smart to be a chess champion. It's no joke. So, I wish we could also aspire to that as well. But again, we're a poor country, so of course most people are going to nab. And as those previous articles have shown, most people just want to break from reality. They don't want to think. They don't want to learn. And that brings me to sort of another deep-rooted, oh, excuse me, a deep-seated issue in our culture. And I'm going to share an article by my friend Jorge. This is from Rappler. Opinion: reading, understanding, and appreciating Rizal. So this is a there's a really good paragraph that Jorge wrote here. Now let me see. The lack of under Okay, so he's talking about why about how. Even for Rizal, people don't really most Filipinos don't really appreciate or understand him, even if it's translated. So obviously my opinion is that you should be able to read him in Spanish, but anyways, the lack of understanding of Rizal comes, in my modest opinion, because Rizal was a writer and suffers the irony of being a national hero in a country where most people do not like to read. So again, we have to it's sort of a chicken and egg situation. If you want you know, being intelligent and being smart, you know, and being well read to be socially desirable in our society, then we have, and I'm sure many of you are fairly well educated, we have to step up and make it so. We have to step up and really make a concerted and coordinated effort to make intelligence, reading and learning, and those sorts of things socially desirable, which was, to be fair, back in the early 1900s, even for beauty queens. So that's what one of the things we aim to do here. Again, I want to help change our culture for the better so that we can change this and reform the system for the better, so that the system works for everybody. But again, it always starts with culture and education. And I guess the culture has to change the education system. We have to reform ourselves. Okay. Especially now because we have a growing middle class. I mean, yeah, the benefits of the current economic growth, I mean, it's normally stays in the top, but some of it's actually trickled down to some of the middle class now, and I see them, and I don't know, maybe I'm just selective perception of things, but I don't see where the aspiration is to become smarter, not to the same way, not in the same way it is in other countries that I've lived in, and with other people I've interacted with in the world. So it has to be there. We have to do something to make it make this make intelligence and working hard and accomplishment socially desirable. And it goes hand in hand with no smart shaming, which I talked about in a previous podcast. So no smart shaming, no crab mentality, no pakikisama, all that stuff. We have to make a concerted effort to change things. And the point of this podcast again is to get a following and make this a popular issue among the financial and educated and cultural elite of this country. Change starts from the top. Right. Before I go, today's Spanish Tagalog vocab for beauty queen. I don't know if this is the correct word in Tagalog. I just put words together, but I'm assuming it's reina ng kagandahan. So reina ng kagandahan, beauty queen, literally. In Espanol, reina de belleza. Reina de belleza. So that's our vocab for this week's episode. If you like what I want to do to help this country, and you really want to fix the problems here, please do share this podcast. The more listeners, the better, the bigger a following we get. So thank you. Muchísimas gracias. Maraming salamat po. I am not sure if I'm going to put out another podcast episode next week. I might be off for Christmas break because I have to attend to a few other things. I'm going to be relaunching my international brand next year. Working on my manga, which I've my international business manga, which I've delayed for a very long time because of obviously my mom's passing and all sorts of other things. But so if you don't see a podcast from me next week, you'll know why. I'll even make an announcement on Facebook. But if you don't hear from me next week, definitely the next podcast for sure will be the first week of January, the first full week of the first Tuesday of January. Okay, so that's it. See you next time. Hasta luego.